Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. And welcome to another episode of the Plant Cunning Podcast. Today, we have herbalist and author Jen Fry on the show, and she's just come out with a book called Communicating with Plants, Heart-Based Practices for Connecting with Plant Spirits. And it's really wonderful. So if you're interested in this sort of stuff, I recommend it. It's a great conversation too, so I think you're going to enjoy the episode. But before we get there, I just want to remind folks that we have less than a month left before the Plant Cunning Conference, which will be at our small farm in central New York. We'll have speakers such as Matthew Wood, Kate Gilday, Lisa Fazio, Zamboni Funk, Joanne Farrar, and myself, and AC. We'll also have some great music. To get tickets, go to www.plantcunningconference.com. And we're also being sponsored by Woodland Essence, which is a fantastic herbal product line by Kate Gilday and her husband Don, and by Maple Creative, which is a wonderful web development company. They helped us make our website. That's about it. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are thrilled to have Jen Fry. She's an author and healer and earth advocate, mentor, teacher, general amazing, inspiring.
Just got out with this book.
Nature person. Yeah, so how are you today, Jen?
I'm great. I'm always happy to talk plants. I'm really happy to be talking with both of you.
Thanks so much. So we do have a traditional first question on the podcast, and it's, how did you come to the plant path?
Yeah. So to me, it doesn't feel like it's always been there. You know, so both sides of my grandparents, plants were really important to them and in very different ways. And I spent a lot of time with my grandparents when I was little. So they just instilled in me this love of plants. So I always knew plants were healing, mostly from my paternal side. They were food as medicine. You know, they grew most of their own food. Mm-hmm. But my maternal side also, my grandfather there was an organic gardener and had like lifelong organic gardening magazine member, and taught me that we sing particularly to strawberries. We always sang to the strawberries when we were harvesting them. We would always ask permission, and he always had music playing in his greenhouse. So, you know, just he really taught me about the plants and honoring them, and that they're just really incredible beings.
So do you think that your grandfather just was raised with that too? Like,
no, you know, that grandfather, it's hard to say. Like, he actually has a really unique upbringing because his parents were missionaries in China. So he spent the first, I actually just wanted to look this up recently because my timing, I can't remember the timeline exactly, but I think he was in his teens and he had to leave because Japan was invading before World War II.
Oh, wow.
But his mother died shortly after he was born. And then his father actually died when he was very young. So he was raised by his stepmother. And I'm not sure where it came from, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I've never thought to ask him that, but he actually was a chicken farmer. That's what he went to college for. Like, mm-hmm. It still blows my mind that he went to college to be a chicken farmer, mm-hmm. and learned, of course, it didn't make a lot of money. And so then he went into the ministry, which also doesn't make a lot of money, but made more money. And I really think he chose that. While his father was a missionary, he was a doctor. He was a really well-renowned doctor. And there is a lot of healers on that side. But I think he became a minister because most of his days could be spent in the garden, as well as helping people. He loved to help people, but I really think it was the garden.
Yeah, I love hearing about people's lineages like that. And so you were pretty much raised with the plants as, you know, friends, it seems like. So what about when you started studying like herbal medicine and things like that? Like, who are some of your teachers and mentors that helped shape you on your path?
Yeah. So I actually, again, started so while I say my, you know, paternal grandparents were food as medicine, and actually mm-hmm. my maternal grandfather was as well. But I came to herbs really young in sixth grade because I had chronic bronchitis, mm-hmm. and like I would get it recurring every year. And I read an article in like this silly teen thing that my mom had bought me. And it said something about thyme is useful for bronchitis. And I really hated, like, there's, I actually write about in the story, I hated taking medicine. There's like this family story of my grandparents and my parents holding me down to get me to take medicine as a
youth. Oh no.
So I never wanted to take it. So I'm like, okay, I will try this. And it worked. And so from then on, I was like, what else can I learn? So then I, you know, so I did a lot of self-study in the early years, like learned about flower essences and homeopathy. And then I kind of took a different path when I was in college. I still was practicing herbs and, you know, taking them, but it wasn't very serious. But I had my children really early in life, and it brought me back to the herbal path because I didn't want to give them antibiotics. I wanted to, you know, treat them naturally. So one of my first inspirations, actually, they now are dear friends, but Tina Sams and her sister Marianne Schwartz, they wrote a book called The Herbal Adventures of the Twisted Sisters. And it's a self-published book. You know, they worked in the Renaissance fairs and but I found this book and it was just like, it reminded me that this is what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be. And so, yeah, so that started the path. And then of course, you know, Rosemary Gladstar inspires everybody, right? And Matt Wood, I devoured Matt's book of herbal wisdom. I studied with great teachers. And then that led, like, it just kept evolving. So it led to studying with my teacher, Pam Montgomery, who wrote the foreword. Prior to Pam, I did flower essence studies with Kate Gilday and David Dalton, you know, like Margie Flint, like all these really great people just really touched my heart and supported my path. And then more recently, one of my teachers is Rocio Alarcón, who also like shifted my path big time.
Wow.
Yes.
That's great. So you just came out with this book, Communicating with Plants, Heart-Based Practices for Connecting with Plant Spirits from Inner Traditions. And so why this book? What prompted this for you to write this book?
So that's the question so many people ask me. And it's always, I always have to laugh because I didn't want to write this book. Because so way back when, you know, again, with my grandfather, I knew that people communicated with plants, right? Like it's the story that I was heard all my life. And I always wanted to be that person. Like, can I be good enough to be able to talk to plants, not talk to them, but hear back from them? Because I was talking with them. Mm-hmm. And I just thought like you had to be this special person. Like, I don't know, there some fairy came down and like lighted your head and everything was good.
Yeah.
And I had teachers that I would try to learn from, and it was always really complicated and I didn't understand it. And I wasn't successful. And so it just reiterated that I'm not special enough. And then in the early 2000s, I had young children and we lived in a really, really tiny house. And the only breaks that I had was early mornings, and I'd go out and pick berries. And so when I was picking the berries, I had a lot, there's a lot of drama in our life at the time. And when I was picking the berries, I would get answers and solutions to everything that was bothering me. And I would go in feeling so much better. And it took me a really long time, like I think it was years actually, before I realized that, oh, those answers are coming from the trees. And so once I realized that I was able to communicate with plants, I became really passionate about it. And I wanted to share it with everybody because we don't have to be special. It's what we all are meant to do. We're all meant to communicate with them. So the plants then asked me to write a book, but I was in my late 20s and I was like, well, what do I have to offer? You know, like there's so many other great herbal people, plant people out there. They should be writing a book. And so I didn't. And but it had been nagging at me for many years, and I would start it and I'd stop it. And then a while ago, I realized that what I thought was humility was actually arrogance, because I was thinking I was writing the book and I wasn't writing the book. It was the plants wanted to write through me. So that's what led me to create a book. But even this book, I had another book proposal. I had about a third of another book written because I was adamant we're not going to talk about communicating with plants. But it wasn't working. It just, things weren't, you know, lining up, and I was getting really frustrated. And I think I did a journey. I think that's how it shifted for me, but I'm not positive. And it just became utterly clear, like, oh, we have to talk about communicating with plants. And just like that, everything shifted. Like I got the book proposal, was accepted in days, like everything lined up. So the reason is because that's what the plants wanted, is really the short answer of that very long explanation.
Yeah, they're in charge. So I want to talk about what communicating with plants looks like to you. But first, you mentioned it might have been a journey briefly. And I'm curious if you can just say, like, speak to what a journey is, like what that means.
Sure. So often they refer to as shamanic journeys. I also like to call them sound journeys. And journey can be in many, many different forms. So, and in my classes, we experience different forms. But the one in which I was talking about there would be with a drum, mm-hmm. where you're using a drum. A rattle is also typical, or some other sound instrument. And the reason for that is because it shifts our brain waves. So it puts us back into theta, which is the state of REM sleep or deep meditation. And when we're in that state, we're just really receptive and open to everything. So we're able to experience things that our logical mind would otherwise block out. And we get answers to questions. So it's one of my main go-tos when I'm struggling or need help in some way, or just like this, you know, what's going on with the book? Like, why isn't this happening? Mm-hmm. That's one of the main tools that I use.
That's so cool. So do you drum yourself into a journey?
Or
do
you? I'm not that good. I listen to it. I listen to a track. I do know people who can drum themselves, but I don't understand. Like, how do you do that? But I'm happy to drum for other people, but for myself, and actually I have done a little bit, but I always stop myself when I'm like drumming for a class that I can find myself going and I'm like, oh no, I have to hold the space. So I'll stay. But yeah, I listen to a track.
Yeah. Cool.
That is really cool. And that's, you talk about, and you explore that technique in this book, as well as several other techniques, because this is heart-based practices for connecting with plant spirits. So could you share with our listeners a little bit about the kinds of techniques and practices that you're using in this book?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things when we're learning how to communicate with plants, it's one, we have to like override all those limiting beliefs, right, that tell us that we can't do it. Or again, going back to like, you have to be a special person to do it. So we're trying to clear away all of that, going back to when we first came into this world and we naturally were able to communicate with them or with other beings. So the one, that's one thing that we're doing, but also we want to have multiple times where we're sitting with a plant or we're spending time with the plant. One, because it helps us to learn different layers of them, just like, you know, having multiple conversations with you would I would learn more about you. You would learn more about me. Our relationship would deepen. But also in that process, we start to realize how we receive information, because each of us receives it differently. There's so many different ways of receiving information. So that's one of the things, reasons why we have these different activities. But at the very core of all of them, before we do any of them, we always get into our heart space. So I use heart coherence, heart space, heart intelligence kind of synonymously. And that's why we say heart-based practices, because we want to be in our heart. Being in our heart allows us to be, again, more receptive. It also helps us to get more accurate information, helps to override a lot of the filters, helps us to be more creative, solution-oriented, to see a broader perspective. And also being in our heart helps us to connect more easily and bond more easily. It's really the base of all good communication. So that's where we start for all of our exercises, is in the heart.
And how do you drop into the heart? Like, how do you actually get from the head to the heart? Because it's like a long road sometimes.
Sometimes it's a really long road. So there's so many different ways. And, you know, so the one that I use in the book and the one that I primarily use in my classes in my life is through gratitude. I always say gratitude is like the magic wand. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we just start thinking of things that we're grateful for. You can say them out loud or think them internally. And you do that until you feel a physiological shift. And that's the key, is that that's when we know we're in our heart, because our bodies respond differently. Mm. So for me, my shoulders drop. My breathing slows. My hands feel bigger. My feet feel bigger. Mm. Sometimes I feel my heart opening, and sometimes that can be painful. Other times I just feel like this big field here. So in the beginning, we want to notice, like, what is it? What are the signs in our body that tell us we're in our heart space? And so, yeah, there are definitely times when gratitude's not doing it, because like we're just, the world's a mess and life's a mess. And we're like, there's nothing to be grateful for.
Yeah.
So, you know, having them written down is helpful, but there's an unlimited amount of ways to access our heart space. But I find gratitude to be the easiest. It's free, you know, it's totally accessible. You don't need anything to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Sometimes I'll feel that immediately just with like petting our cats and dog and looking at our cute little geese waddling around. You just can't help but feel that gratitude and stepping into your heart space, you know.
Absolutely. For me, we have a new grandbaby. So that's what I think of when I'm like struggling. It's like, I mean, he's a little over a year old now, but still I just think about holding him and it's just like immediate heart. Like
you're
like,
there.
I can do any work.
Yes, perfect. Yeah, that's so special.
Also, yeah. Maybe when you're picking berries, you know, thank you, berries. These are so good and tasty. And then that's when you...
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Appreciate, that would be what we call appreciation, you know, like just really appreciating. And that's the thing is that there's so much around us. So when we're in that space of like, oh, there's nothing good, it's like, okay, we need to open our eyes because there's so much around us that supports us and loves us and makes this world just incredibly magical and will put us into that heart space if we allow it.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about what you were saying earlier of before you connected with the trees and the way that you realized they were giving you messages, you had this like hump to overcome of feeling like I am not a special enough person. I feel like that's so common. Like we hear about people communicating with plants and we're like, well, that's not me. That's like a special person. So can you describe more what that looks like to communicate with plants and nature spirits and other beings, you know?
Yeah. So again, it really depends on the individual. So for me personally, I do hear messages, but I hear them inside my head, just like if I was, you know, like I would hear my mother's voice in my head, basically, you know. So it's usually different words, different tone than my normal internal thoughts. Sometimes it's like, yeah, sometimes it's really funny. I'm like, oh, I can't believe that's clearly not me. I also see images. I also feel things in my body. Those are the main ways for me that it comes across. Other people get songs. One of my students gets a poem whenever she's communicating with the plant. I always love to hear her poems. Okay. And so the key is just to find out, you know, how you're receiving it. But most of the time, people are receiving messages and they don't realize it. They just kind of discredit it. So even in the classes, one of the keys that we do in my classes is you just write down everything. Anything that you're noticing, anything that's coming into your awareness, we write it down. We're like Sherlock Holmes. We're just recognizing everything. And then later we can put discernment on and we can say, okay, yeah, that doesn't make sense here. Or maybe we put a question mark on it. But when we can do that, it allows us to start to see the patterns and some things that we may have thrown away saying, oh, that's just too much or that's too crazy. We realize, oh, that is actually what the plant is telling us about.
I thought it was really interesting reading in your book about how you would give your students unlabeled essences to take in class or even throughout the whole month, and they would record all these notes to it. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about that experiment and like what you found?
Yeah. So, it goes back again to just part of this work is really learning how to trust and just to let go of expectations and be willing to be brave and just experiment. So with my students in the apprenticeship program, we make essences. And so, yeah, everybody makes their own essence. And then each of them makes three stock bottles. So they test their own essence. So they know what essence they're working with. But they give it to me and I put symbols on the label. So nobody knows what they got, including myself. Like I keep a key somewhere, but I don't know what these different symbols are. And so I test all of them. And then one other of their classmates will get an essence to test too that they don't know. And so we usually test them via journeying, but we'll also just take them and see what we feel, like what's happening in our lives. And everybody records it. They send me their notes and I compile it. And it's so interesting to see. I mean, you know, sometimes somebody will pick up on something that someone else won't. But other times there's like this repeated theme and it just helps to strengthen that trust muscle that, you know, yes, there is validity in this.
Totally. And this brings us to essences. So what are essences and how do you work with them and maybe how do you make them?
Sure. So essences are energetic preparations of a plant that are kept in water. So it's the energetic imprint of the plant. For my essences, I also call on the plant spirit. So I include the plant spirit in the essences, and there are great essence makers, including my teachers, David Dalton, Kate Gilday, Pam, who doesn't sell her essences anymore, but they all do this as well. Mm-hmm. But not all essences do. And so what they do, so we make them, I'll tell you how I make them. I don't necessarily make them the same way that everybody else does, because I don't actually use any plant parts in my essences anymore. Once upon a time I did, but I was working with some rare plants and some potentially poisonous plants, because long ago when I first started making essences, I would mostly make them when I was traveling. So I often didn't even know who I was making the essence with. I would get called and make it, and then would research later. So I have a bowl of water, a glass bowl of water, and my bowls are from Crate and Barrel. These are the same glass bowls that David gave us when we did our training. And I fill it up with really pure water. We don't want chlorine for sure. And the key, first of all, is before making an essence, like I just said, I always get invited by the plant. So I think that's important. We can ask, and I have done that a few times. If there's a plant that I really would like an essence from, I will ask them, can I make an essence with you? But mostly I'm waiting for the plants to invite me to make this medicine. And so it's really a co-creative process. So I have the bowl of water. I set it by the plant. Sometimes I hold it and I say prayers. So I'm just asking the plant to, you know, pour their energy, their essence into this bowl of water, so that this water is a matrix of them, can share their medicine, their gifts with others. And I listen. So for some of the plants, it's immediate. Other plants, the bowl has to sit there for hours. Sometimes I have to be there. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes we come back at night, you know, like it, everyone is different. But they're all guided by the plant. And when they tell me that it's complete, then I bottle it. We do 40%. I use brandy, 40% brandy to the water. And that's what we call a mother essence. And so the modern discoverer of flower essences, Dr. Bach, he was also a homeopath. So the basis of them is dilution. So we don't take the mother essence, but from that, we would dilute it down to a stock essence. And that is what you buy in a store. And most flower essence practitioners don't work with the stock. I do for, if I want a journey, that's who I will work with. Or if we're working with more physical ailments, we work with the stock essence. But if you go to a flower essence practitioner, we work with dosage. And so it's diluted again. You take the stock and you dilute it down again into the dosage. So that may have been more information than what you wanted.
No, we're here for that. Yeah, no, that's super helpful.
And it is really interesting that you don't use the plant material in the flower essences. And in a way, it does make sense, because there's barely any in it anyway, but it's the spiritual imprint, higher planes or inner planes, that is what's making it work.
Right, exactly. And I think one of the keys that I didn't say is that, you know, that with the dosage, you know, so one is working, it's considered to work more on the emotional, spiritual realm, but we know that they're effective because they create change in a person. And sometimes that change is really subtle. I mean, that's what often is talked about with flower essences, that they work subtly. They can also really like turn things around in a really great way, can really help you feel balanced again, or can also like really, I've had some that like had me down on my knees, bawling my eyes out, all in good, because I had to bring up unexpressed grief, right. But still, you know, they can be really dramatic as well.
Yeah. Well, sometimes things that are happening on a more subtle plane have more potent reactions in the physical than, you know, other physical actions.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
And how I've heard of like flower essences, I've heard of tree essences, but you also use an essence, or you make an essence out of like the spirit of place or nature spirits. And I was wondering if you could speak to that and how that works.
Yeah. So that's what we would call an environmental essence. So I have several, you know, I have one from a well in Ireland. I have one from the mountains in Ecuador. Like, and so really I mean, I'm sure we've all had it. It's like, you know, when you're walking in a place and you just feel the energy is very different than, like, the energy in my backyard is very different than the energy of New York City, right? So they all have their own energies. And so when we're doing an environmental essence, it's the same thing, only rather than working with a specific plant, I'm working with all of the energies in that area. And so we just call on them and ask them to create this essence. So again, this essence can help carry that medicine forward. And it depends, like, I don't make as many environmental essences as I do. I call mine spirit essences, but you would call them flower or tree plant essences. Mm-hmm. But I do. And when I do, there's usually a reason for it. Like, again, with the well, it's like, this is a really healing well that it helped people to understand the roots of their healing. It's Bridget's well. You know, Bridget is obviously a big part of my life because that's the name of my business. So, you know, there's a reason for that special environment to help bring change.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm curious how you, like, work with the nature spirits and the spirits of place. Like how do you call them in? How do you talk to them? How do you know if they're friendly? And like what they're gonna help with, you know, or bring up for people.
Well, one, I don't know if I can answer that last question because I don't always know what they're gonna bring up for people.
Sure.
Right, okay. Right.
True.
And honestly, I don't know if I can even answer any of it. So for me in my life, I've always had this connection with the fairies, but I didn't have a word for it when I was younger. I mean, I of course knew of fairy tales, but I didn't know that, like, when I was a kid, these gifts would just appear in my room and I would never know, like, I would ask my mom, I would ask my friends, like anybody that was ever there, and nobody would ever, like, say, yes, I gave it to you.
Yeah. So like most people, they, like, have their stuff gone, taken.
They brought
and then they bring you all of the keys and the gold watches.
Yes. Yes, I'm the one who is hoarding all of it. No, not quite like that, but I've definitely had it taken as well. Uh-huh. But you know, they would bring things. And so, but I didn't really have the words for it again until I was older and as an adult, and I was working with reclaiming. And so then I started realizing, like, oh, those experiences that I had as a kid, those were fairies. So one of the other things for me is that from a young child, I was just really good at sensing energy. Mm-hmm. And you know, part of that's actually kind of a trauma response of, like, having to know how different people are responding so we can maintain it and keep everybody nice and happy. But so for me, the fairies just kind of welcome me. So they're my main key. Like, there are so many different nature spirits out there, and they all have their own little flavor almost. But also, I think so much of what we talk about now with nature spirits is actually inaccurate. A lot of it comes through a Christian lens, and there's a lot of fear on it. And it also comes through, I don't know what that lens is, but I guess it's colonialism, of like this hierarchy. Uh-huh. What'd you say, AC?
Like the fear of nature in general, you know, through colonialism, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Fear of nature. But also the part that I was saying there is like this belief that there are, you know, this being's higher than this being, or this being's lower than this being. And they don't work that way. Like, nature doesn't work on a hierarchy at all. Yeah. It's just that some have better skills than others. And the nature spirits don't have any actual form to them, you know, so they're spirit. But they can take on whatever form we need them to. And so if we have thoughts in our head of like, oh, this is what a fairy looks like, then they can appear as such to us. Or this is, you know, who this looks like, or, you know, they're scary, so then they can appear scary to us. Mm. I feel like I'm going off tangent again.
Oh, no, this is great. I mean,
we love talking about fae.
The other thing with fairies and nature spirits too, is that people have different words for these beings too. And like a lot of traditional lore in regards to fairies is pretty scary. Stealing children instead of just gold watches or what have you. But are these the kind of beings you're talking about, or are they more like what I would consider like a nature spirit, or like how do you define, or can you even like categorize all these spirits?
Yeah, so we talk about this in the second year of the apprenticeship. Okay. And so, you know, for me and for my work with the nature spirits, they don't really like to be defined, but they also understand that with humans, it's necessary for us to like try to kind of comprehend it because it's so
humans.
Right. You know, it's so outside of our realm of understanding. So I just want to back up there to what you're saying, Isaac, about those traditional stories. And I would say that those aren't the traditional stories. I would say those are the stories that have been co-opted by Christianity. And so there's a whole point in it, because it was about getting us to be afraid of nature, and particularly of like really that deep connection that we used to get from being in the woods. And once upon a time, humanity worked with all of these beings and all of the unseen. And that's how we got to create, you know, magic and incredible things that are beyond our capability of understanding. And I think that we can do that again. So I want us to do that. I want us to develop a stronger relationship with them. And how I work with them is like, it's limitless. You know, I always talk about the plants, but that's only a category of it, because really all of them guide my life and they guide us on what we're doing here at the sanctuary. So whether what we're planting, where we're working, what we're harvesting, you know, like what classes I'm teaching, what I teach in my classes, like they guide everything. I think the biggest step, I just want to say, if people want to develop a relationship with them, I'm looking over here because that's where my altar is, like outside, I have an altar for them. So that's what I would offer, is if you want to have a relationship, to just set up a place where you're giving offerings, and food's always a good thing. And then, but if it's leftover, don't eat it, give it to the earth. Yes. You know, but that's the beginning.
Yeah. Great advice. Yeah. It's kind of like any relationship, you know, starting with a good meal, some snacks can really help.
Right.
Creating that bond. Yes. Yeah. Interesting.
And I guess also the main important thing is to develop your own relationship with the beings, because it does seem like, well, the mind only goes so far and words and language only goes so far. And everyone has their own understanding and own way of interacting and experiencing more subtle entities or energies.
Yeah. Yeah. And so just because you asked about the healing, they're showing me this image. So, you know, with the apprenticeship program, we work with them more in the second year, but we do it in the first year too, that one of the first things I do is I bring my students, we have a little fairy glen here, and I take my students there and we just spend time. And so some people sense it, not everybody does, but often which I've not had this experience in other lands that I worked at. This is the first one that showed me how to do this, that the fairies were going in there and they were adjusting our bodies so that one, we were more able to like sense them and be in connection with nature, but also just helping us to align more with who we are and health and healing. So like this spring, I got COVID for the first time and it really exhausted me. And so as soon as I could get outside, my love hung up a hammock out in the fairy glen for me. And I just laid out there and just let them work on me. It's just like, just come here and readjust my body. And like, and you know, I just felt so held and loved. And it was the most healing thing I did that whole time.
Wow, that's so cool.
So the fairies practice like energy work on people.
Oh, for sure. Wow. I mean, you know, I don't want to, like, I'm sure there's gonna be somebody that's like scared now, like I don't want to go out but you know, it's, I ask for it, like they show, yeah, I mean, yeah. I want to be in relationship with them, and so they showed me, like, this is because they showed it to me this time when I moved here, as because I already had identified, oh, that area is a fairy area before I bought the land. And so when I moved there, I went to go meet with them. And so they were telling me, they were helping me to tune in with the land. So that's how they first showed it to me. Yeah.
Cool. Cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we have, so you also, to talk about like energy work and energy hygiene, in the book, you talk about mugwort being very helpful for that. And that's something I think that isn't talked about as much these days, is the importance of energy hygiene and like what actually that means.
Yeah, I'm always interested in hearing from people who work, you know, on like the more energetic field, like how do you protect yourself? How do you have good, healthy boundaries and things like that?
Cleanse yourself.
And cleanse yourself. Yeah.
Cleanse myself. Yeah. Yeah, so plants. but yeah, I think energy hygiene is a really big deal. And it's something in our culture, it's fortunately growing a little bit, but it's still not really understood. Like the average person, if you ask them what's energy hygiene mean, they'd be like, I have no idea. Or if you ask them, like, what energy hygiene process do you use, they wouldn't know.
Yeah.
even the people that do know, like I had some clients and some students that come into me and I had one client many years ago who was working in the welfare office, and I'd be like, okay, well, are you smudging? And she's like, no, I'm not smudging. Like, oh my God, you definitely have to be clearing after this. Like there's so many energies you're picking up. Yeah. So just to be clear, in case anybody doesn't know what it means, energy hygiene is clearing our energy, cleaning our energy. Like we are energetic beings and we live in a sea of energy. So we naturally bring it onto us. And unfortunately, with the society that we live in, it's really hard to have a really strong aura between, like, I mean, we're using a computer. So EMFs, you know, cell phones, like the trauma and drama that surround us all the time, and pesticides and all this other stuff, it's hard to have a good aura. Mm. So therefore it's even more important that we're taking part in energy hygiene and cleaning our bodies of any excess energies or unwanted energies, and also protection. So for me, I don't have a simple answer for you because it depends on the situation, but I often surround myself with plant spirits. I mean, I'm wearing a plant top today, but one of my favorite companies is Taproot Threads. Yes. And they have little, like, you know, plants on their clothing. Yes. And my closet's full of them. And because it's like, oh, I'm going to wear yarrow today. So I literally like am wrapping myself up in the spirit of the plant. And that's how I can move through the world. And so I always have plants with me, plants surrounding me. Before we got on the call, I was clearing, I have a smudge clearing spray. So I was spraying. But then I also just picked up a Tulsi hydrosol. So I'm like, okay, we're going to bring in some Tulsi too, just to like lighten up the energy a little bit. I do a process. I'm not sure if I talk about it in the book, but I do a process called egg limpias, where we use an egg for clearing the body, the energy.
Cool.
I work with plants. Like I'm actually, today I went out and took pictures. I haven't posted them yet, but our walkway, it's like the plants keep falling over. We keep tying them up and they keep falling over. So it's like every time we leave our house, we're getting a plant limpia. Like all the mail people, all the delivery people are getting plant limpia. It's like, you know, sometimes you just have to laugh. The plants, they're just going to take over, and that's great. I think, you know, in my healing practice, there's so much we just don't understand how having these energies and part of it is also that we're not aware of the thoughts and the things that we send out to this world, that they have physical consequences. So if you're thinking something nasty or you're directing nasty energy towards somebody, you're really affecting them. Wow. And it can result in disease or accidents or all kinds of weird things. Yeah. So a good portion of my clients, I mean, yes, we're like also working on root traumas and stuff, but a lot of it, we're just clearing these energies and rebalancing them so we can be healthy again and vital again.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons that like cold showers have come into fashion, because that's one form of like cleaning your energy body. And why also like she makes these room sprays with plant like essential oils, and people are liking those a lot, but those actually, in a way, that they'll help a little bit too.
Yeah, absolutely. But
what are some of the, like, in your experience, are like all plants protective? Or I mean, I'm sure there are some that are more cleansing mm-hmm. than others. And what plants do you work with the most in this area?
Yeah, so I have a long list. the thing I say is, like, whenever there's a need, nature provides, and nature provides in abundance. So we have such a big need of protection and clearing. So, I mean, you already said mugwort, right? So mugwort, I don't normally think of mugwort as being a good protector, but mugwort's a great clearer. It just helps to get mm-hmm. energies moving. And so I've worked with mugwort in all forms, like, you know, taking internally, smudging, spraying, calling on the plant spirit, taking the flower essence, like for really when I need my energy moved and cleared, including in traumatic situations. It's just like, okay, we got to get this energy moving through me. I don't need this stuck in my body. But as far as good protectors, like two of my biggest favorites are yarrow, who I write about in the book, and is one of our plant lymphias out here.
Perfect.
And yarrow provides like a little shield around us. And St. John's wort, which John's wort does the opposite. It comes in internally, increases our light, and then shines out. So it like really helps to heal mm-hmm. our aura from the inside out. So those are two of my biggest ones, but like poison ivy's in there. Poison ivy's like a great protector, particularly when your boundaries are getting like trod over again and again. Aloe is a good one. San Pedro, like the one bed actually right by our walkway, it's all protective plants. So there's rue mm-hmm. in there, mints in there, echinacea, you know, it's just like
a little spiky.
Yeah. Yeah. They do kind of have their own flavor. So it's also like, what are you drawn to the most? And again, there's such an abundance, like, you know, we can just surround ourselves in it. And I think if there's a plant that just feels really, well, the word's protective to you, like if you feel really safe having this plant around you, then that's your good protector.
Mm.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of about building your own relationship with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes also like plants can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this because in the book, you also talk about several poisonous plants. And that's actually one of the listener questions is about the poison hemlock and poison ivy. And I know that they're used in flower essences and in homeopathy as like, what is it? Antipathy or sympathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're used in very small doses, but how do you work with poisonous plants and should they be feared?
So I had a reaction to plants can be dangerous. So I think it's more about like knowing the plants and knowing how to work with them, just like anybody, you know, or anything. It's like, it's about the way in which we interact that something can be, I mean, water, like I have a client who ended up in the hospital because they drank too much water, you know, like anything can be harmful if it's not done in the right dose or the right amount. That being said, with known poisonous plants, like poison hemlock is probably the strongest one around, at least where I live. We don't ingest them. I work with the plant spirit of them and I work with them in a journey state. I do make essences with them and I'll take the essence and they just help guide. And every plant I feel has many gifts. They're not all for humans. Like sometimes those gifts are for nature, like poison ivy in particular. Sometimes poison ivy is showing up because we need to just stay out of that area and let nature heal. Mm-hmm. And humans have a hard time recognizing that. So then we go to war with poison ivy rather than like saying, oh, okay, you need time. You need a break. I'm going to honor that. But all plants, you know, have so much to offer. And again, it might be for other species. It might be for the energy. It might be for the land. Like that's part of this work when we're drawn to a plant is what are your gifts and how do we work with you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I was being a little hyperbolic, but in our culture as a whole, there is a fear of plants and fear of the wild, you know, and especially people who haven't grown up in relationship with plants, they just see a wall of green, you know, and it's scary. And it is also true there are plants that can kill you, but it's also true that water can kill you.
Right. I mean, there are lots of things that can, and you know, plants heal us. And I actually have some students that have such a fear of even just grass, but yet come and I'm always amazed. I'm like, you do know that we're going to be working outside and working with plants, right? But there's something in them that's like, even though they have that fear, there's something in them that they know they're missing out. And then they have these beautiful experiences and it helps to heal those fears. Doesn't necessarily alleviate them. Like sometimes they still have to work through it. And like, I mean, one of the things you didn't mention there and all the fears is there's a big fear of Lyme disease right now too, right? Lots of people are just so terrified to go anywhere. And you know, Lyme disease is a real deal. So like, I understand it, but the fear is not going to help us to be who we need to be or learn how to create this better world.
So true. I just thought of, like, as we were talking about poison ivy, this like experience with poison ivy popped up for me, if you don't mind.
I'd love to hear.
So one time I was living at an herb farm in the Hudson Valley and my Great Pyrenees like kind of got loose from me. And it was when I first got her and she was very wild and she ran across the field, across the road. And the field that was coming up was literally like a sea of small poison ivy plants. Mm-hmm. And I was like running barefoot after her. And I see this field and I'm like, I just like stopped. And I just had this like moment of opening my heart to poison ivy. And I had gotten poison ivy so bad growing up. I had the fear. I was like, I stay away from it. It messes me up. And I was like, Poison Ivy, like, can you grant me passage? Like, grant me safe passage through this field to go retrieve my dog who's new and I really want to keep her. And it seemed like it was willing. And so I went for it and I ran through the field and I got my dog and I came back and I had no poison ivy. I did wash my feet after, but like no problem whatsoever, which was like the first time I really understood like it is a relationship between the plants. And, you know, I haven't had that type of like terrible reaction from poison ivy pretty much since then. I feel like we had like a moment there, you know?
That's fabulous. Thanks for sharing.
Sure. Thanks for listening. So with the talk of poison ivy and poisonous plants, I am curious too, if in your opinion, invasive plants actually exist.
Yeah. So no. And I know I might get hit hard on that one. You know, again, I talk about in the book and particularly because Japanese hops is there. And mm-hmm. So my feeling is that, you know, with humans, we just have such a short time span. Like we just look at the right. world in short time. I actually just interviewed William Padilla Brown recently, and he's talking mm-hmm. about truffles and they used to be cup mushrooms. And somehow over the eons, they transformed into truffles. And I'm like, whoa. So he's like, you know, you might see a cup mushroom now. And then like a million years, that might be a truffle. Wow. And so it just blows my mind about the time of the earth. And so, you know, earth is always evolving. And so often we think of evolution stopped with Darwin, and it was a long time ago. And now everything is the way it is meant to be. But at the same time, I think it's getting harder and harder to believe that because, you know, we're getting inundated with all these earth changes, like the fires, like the extreme heat, the flooding that's been going on. Like we just can't ignore that the earth is changing and it's constantly changing. And so for me, I understand there's some fear around invasives. And, you know, I don't really like to talk about big categories because different plants are different things. But like Japanese hops that was here is still here, can grow 35 feet in a season, and it's in one direction. They have multiples of these at all times. So like they can really cover a huge distance of land in no time at all, and will pull trees down. So I do understand why people would have a reaction to that. But my question is always, why are you here? And what is the purpose of you? Because I really do feel like nature has their own intelligence, and often we don't understand what that is. And so the plants are moving in for reasons. And again, sometimes it's for humans, like, you know, Japanese knotweed, it's been shown often will show up before Lyme disease. And it's one of the remedies of Lyme disease. Or like, so sometimes it is for humans. And sometimes it is because the land is disturbed. I mean, that's what's often talked about with invasives. It's that there are these big, oh, I just lost the word, but basically they're able to take advantage of a really bad situation. And so I see it differently as like, oh, they're here to help heal the earth, or like they're here to get us to move out of it. Or in my experience with Japanese hops here, they were showing up because I wasn't doing a project that I needed to do on the land because I was scared and I was overwhelmed by it because I didn't really understand. It was like beyond what I knew of as my capabilities. Mm. And so they showed up in a really, really big way and kept trying to get my attention, and I ignored them. And then my students were coming and they're like, hey, Japanese hops really wants to talk to you. I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't have time though. So they're just gonna have to wait. Meanwhile, they're like taking over the sanctuary. Uh-huh. And then I eventually did sit with them and they showed me like, hey, you're not doing your part here. And so we're gonna keep doing this until you step up and you do what's needed. Wow. And so that's for me. I just feel like invasives. I mean, I also have to say I've always been one for the underdogs. So yeah. Like, you know, like where I live, I'm not sure if they're up with you yet, but we have the spotted lanternflies and like everybody was losing their mind here. And I see people just running with glee to go squish them. Mm-hmm. And I think like one, they're really cool beings. Like they're so interesting, right? Like,
yeah.
And so there's a reason for it, and nature ends up balancing themselves out if we give them the opportunity. And as humans, one of our roles is to help in that, but we have to have the information. We have to know why, and you know, what is it that we can do to help balance this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of what are termed invasives are generalists and opportunists.
Right. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Opportunist. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're entering a time, and we already are in this time of massive climate changes. Like there's a lot of, mm-hmm. I mean, even just this summer, we've had smoke from thousands of miles away, blanketing the land for days at a time. We've had torrential downpours. We've had in the Southwest, there's a massive heat wave, like over 110 degrees in Arizona for the whole month of July. You know, these sorts of things. I mean, this is what's happening. I mean, we can blame a lot of things, but it's what's happening.
Right.
So I have faith in the larger beings and being that is the earth and the sub beings that the nature spirits. We are ultimately not as powerful as we'd like to think we are. And I think a lot of the hysteria over invasives is like, it comes from the same root as like that desire to control and destroy nature. And in fact, they want to just replace everything with just the natives that were here in 1491, you know, and nothing else. But plants are always moving around. So I don't know. That's just my opinions. I'm sure we'll get some hate mail, but
amazingly, I haven't gotten hit hard yet from the book. We'll see what, you know, as time goes on, what people say, but amazingly, I haven't. And I've had some people read it who are big native plant lovers. And I don't want to like, I love native plants. I mean, native plants here. But again, like I said, I work with the nature spirits. So sometimes the nature spirits of this land want a plant that's not native. Yeah. And it's because they're balancing some kind of energy, or they're helping to bring the energy in. And so I listen to that. I mean, I'm not going to plant a bamboo grove. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not going to plant Japanese knotweed. I'm not going to do that.
Right. But I'm also not going to like, I mean, I've seen, you know, again, people who just are all about organic gardening and native plants and real big plant and nature lovers. When they get this invasive plant in there, they're like, I'm going to bring out the Roundup, you know, I'm going to like, we got to destroy it. And that war mentality comes in again. And whenever the war mentality comes forward, that's when I always want to say, hey, let's just take a step back. Like, let's take a step back and see what's going on here. Cause you know, war's not gotten us anywhere, no matter what it is that you're trying to like do, it's never been truly successful. So like, let's just see what's really going on here. And also understand that, as you're saying, Isaac, like we're not the supreme beings here. We're not the know-it-alls. There's a lot that we don't understand. And you know, what's really happening.
I'm curious about your sanctuary. You've mentioned, you know, your land and the land that you live on in the sanctuary. Like, what is it like, and what do you do there, and what do you do on like the day to day as well?
Unfortunately, on the day to day, I'm a little too much on the computer. To be honest, this type of computer is fun, but you know, it's all the other stuff. Right. But so we have 4.5 acres here, and we're in the Susquehanna River Valley. We're actually 2 miles from the Susquehanna River. So this was
we're in the headwaters up.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Very so tough. You can send your blessings down this way.
Yeah. Yes. And we do.
Great. So this was the territory of the Susquehannocks that haven't been here for a very long time, but one of the largest villages, that's not what they called them, but I'm having a blank right now, was just down the road from here. So we know that they were most definitely over here. And we think that this land was probably like a wetland forest because there's springs all over the place. So we call it Heart Spring Sanctuary. And that's one reason there's springs everywhere, but also I struggle with names and I can never like, I'm always like, oh, I can't name anything. And so I was thinking like, what does this land want to be called? And one day I went out and I think I tripped or something actually, but I saw this giant quartz that was in the shape of a heart. Wow. And it was right at the base of a spring coming out. Aww. And so it's like, all right, I got you. So that's what we call it. So we think it was originally wetlands and woods, but there are three ponds here. It was mostly mown grass when we moved in. So we've planted probably hundreds of trees and lots of bushes and of course plants. And one of the best things we ever did here was we stopped mowing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we still mow. We have to mow right now, actually, but we mow pathways. Mm-hmm. And then I have a labyrinth, so we take care of that as well. Mm-hmm. And we have, like I said, the fairy glen. Mm-hmm. And so what we do here is I have classes. I will be honest and say we're, as much as I love this place, we're also looking for a new sanctuary.
Really?
Which the land has made clear, you know, that's the next step as well, that this has been my university is what they told me right from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And I have learned so much here. But in the meantime, until we find that next sanctuary, we do have classes here and we're just constantly trying to heal this land. So on top of the ponds, we also have a creek that cuts across the property, so kind of divides it. And on either side, we're on a corner, but either side of the road are these two huge conventional farms that are primarily corn, and they do, you know, the GMO and spraying, and the water comes off of them and pours right into our land. And, and so the one we can't do anything about because the creek starts right at the road. So it just goes right into the creek, but the other one, it goes into a culvert. And so, and then was going right into the creek again, which again, we're also part of the Chesapeake Bay, you know, Susquehanna River goes into the Chesapeake Bay, which is one of the most polluted bays around. So mostly from farmland. So we've been working, that was the big project that we weren't doing when Japanese Hops was trying to get my attention, was they wanted us to develop a rain garden to slow the water down, get all the pesticides, the fertilizers, all the stuff that would otherwise go in, and also change that energy. And so that's what we did. We're still, you know, tweaking it. Yeah, that's our sanctuary.
Oh, so awesome. Cool. Sounds so amazing. And I love that you listened to the plants and made that rain garden. Like, that's such an amazing thing to contribute to, not just your neighborhood, but the water system that, you know, feeds into the bay. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, we've been here. Thank you, first of all, but we've been here. This is my sixth year and it's just so amazing. Like this year in particular, even though I've been like not wanting to be here, it's this mixed feeling. I love it here. And also I'm ready to move on to our next place.
Yeah.
But in that time, the trees and the bushes that we planted, they've really grown, right? And so the bird population has like just grown exponentially here.
Wow.
And all the other, like we had a turkey visit us. We've deer have been here, but we had a fawn visit us. Like, you know, like there's coyotes and foxes have started to come, which muskrats, like more and more animal species have been showing up since we've been here and like been working with the land to heal it. And so it's so great to see that the work that we're doing is benefiting other beings. And also we're so blessed to have them in our life.
Yeah, that's amazing. I hope that you find your perfect sanctuary spot very soon and you can continue to work your magic on the lands that you live at.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, how can people get in contact with you and find out about your classes and books and so on?
Yeah. So the easiest way is my website, which is bridgetsway.com. And so there's lots of information there, classes, blogs, videos, and my email's there. So, you know, always feel free to send me an email.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jen. This has been a fantastic talk. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. And thanks for the work that you're doing too.
Thank you. All right. Cheers.